Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. My name is Philip Heilman. I'm your host. Today's edition is for Monday, October 8th, 2013. With me today, we have Alligator Assistant Editor, Alligator Sports Assistant Editor, Adam Lichtenstein.
Hi.
And Alligator Football Writer, Joe Morgan.
Hey, Philip. Monday's the 7th.
Monday's the 7th, not the 8th. All right, so it's the show for the 7th, excuse me.
Guys,
before we get right in it, it's October. What's your favorite thing about this month? It's one of my favorite months of the year.
My favorite thing was the NLDS game the Braves did not lose.
There's only one of those so far.
Yeah, so you can understand. Okay.
For those of you listening, the Braves just got beat by the Dodgers 10-4.
13-6.
13-6. Okay, it was 10-4 last time I looked. Joe, where are your emotions at right now?
In a dark, dark place.
Okay, thanks. Steve, Adam, what's your favorite thing about October?
I'm going to go with pumpkins. There's pumpkins everywhere. Pumpkin spice lattes, pumpkin beer, just pumpkin carving pumpkins. It's a good month.
Well, don't tell that to Inside the Gators' Brian Holt. I tweeted something that I was looking forward to pumpkins the other day, and he called me a 12-year-old girl. So maybe all of us 12-year-old girls can get together and show him what's up with pumpkins. Getting right into football, it's been a while since we've been on the podcast. Florida's fresh off a 30-10 win against Arkansas and is heading to LSU this weekend to face the Tigers. Guys, it's been a while. We haven't really been on a podcast. We've been busy here making papers and making paper. But since we've been gone, I'm sure, as you know, starting quarterback Jeff Driskel suffered a fractured right fibula against Tennessee in the first quarter and will be out for the season. In his place is redshirt junior Tyler Murphy. Joe, I want you to go ahead and just talk a little bit about Murphy and how impressive he has been through, you know, two and three quarters games.
Well, Muschamp mentioned it yesterday that Murphy has been a very good game manager for the Gators so far. Obviously, the competition isn't going to be what Florida's facing in the upcoming month, 2 months, but it's been very impressive to see him come in and really manage the offense. And if I may, his pocket presence is pretty outstanding. I mean, compared to Driskel, I think he senses pressure very well. I think there's been a couple of plays where actually he's noticed, somehow with some eye in the back of his helmet that defender's coming and he's able to step up and make a play. So we'll see how that translates, but very impressive so far.
Adam, what have you seen from him?
Like Joe said, his pocket presence has been great. There's been so many times where he'll be surrounded by guys and he'll just break away, and you know, if he'll make a run or he'll get a pass off. Even though he did have that one play against Arkansas where he was about to get sacked and he threw the ball just randomly, he got lucky that it wasn't intercepted by anyone. But I've just been really impressed by how he's done so far. I thought he would do decently against Kentucky and Arkansas, but he's surpassed any expectations I had for him.
I've seen on Twitter here in the last few weeks a lot of people jumping to conclusions about who Tyler Murphy is after only a couple of games as Florida starter, talking about how Florida misevaluated the talent that they had on their team and their program, and that Murphy, you know, is already a better player than Driskel ever was for the Gators. Joe, do you buy into that at all, or do you think that's just people jumping to conclusions?
Well, I understand where people would gather those conclusions, but I do think they're a bit premature. Again, the upcoming slate really is going to determine how he fares. I mean, going to Tiger Stadium and doing the same things he did in Lexington and in Gainesville, it's going to be pretty difficult. I will say, though, I mean, in terms of the pocket presence, in terms of, I mean, really, you know, it seems that Murphy has a really good rapport with the receivers, too. I mean, Solomon Patton and Murphy have a telepathic, some reporters would say, relationship.
One that Patton did not deny when pressed.
Patton neither confirmed nor denied that he and Tyler Murphy share a telepathic relationship. This is awful. People don't even get this. And we're sitting here laughing about it, and they're listening to this podcast going, where the hell are they going with this?
7 the Gators have beaten Toledo, Arkansas, Tennessee, and Kentucky. The Florida's 3-0 in the SEC, tied with Georgia for first in the SEC Eastern Division. A little bit different when you look at who the two teams have played.
Hey. Okay, Missouri only has one conference win. I was about to say, don't overlook the Tigers, man.
Which Tigers?
Missouri is undefeated. Only, well, Mizzou, only one win over Vanderbilt. But Georgia's already played a beef of their SEC schedule. They beat South Carolina, and they beat LSU. And then they've also hung on against Tennessee, whereas Florida's played Arkansas, Kentucky, and Tennessee. I kind of want to talk a little bit about this upcoming matchup with LSU. We'll have an LSU podcast later on this week. But what are some realistic expectations for Florida going into Death Valley? Is this a game they can win?
I think it's certainly a game you have to look at that they can win. I know LSU's is undoubtedly going to be the most dynamic offense they've faced so far. I know these guys didn't get a chance to watch LSU-Georgia a lot, considering they were kind of focused on getting to the stadium in Lexington. But for those of us who stayed home, I got to see a lot of it. And Zach Mettenberger was very impressive, considering Georgia's young secondary, obviously. But in a road environment, looks very good. Looks like a very different quarterback from last season. But Florida has the defense to do it, and if Tyler Murphy can, if Tyler Murphy can even play close to what he's doing now, I don't see any reason why Florida can't leave with a victory. I mean, I'm not guaranteeing anything, but
not a Gator guarantee.
Not a Gator guarantee, no. But I don't see any reason why Florida fans should just write this one off.
Steve, if you had to put a percentage chance on Florida going into LSU and winning this week, how confident are you?
I'm gonna say 41%.
41%. There you go.
41.3%.
I thought you were going to go 42% for Mariano Rivera.
I should have gone 42%. But Florida's defense can keep them in any game. I see what you did there. Florida's defense can keep them in any game. If they can hold LSU to not to a relatively low amount of points, and they have held SEC opponents to under 20 points in every SEC game since the end of 2011, since the South Carolina game. If they can hold them to 14 points, then all it takes is, one big run or one botched tackle, and Florida's right in the game, and they have a good chance to win it.
We're watching the Georgia-Tennessee game, the LSU-Georgia game, in the press box a couple weeks ago, and the play of Zach Mettenberger really stuck out to me, because this is a guy, when he came into Florida Field last year, he went 11 of 25 for only 158 yards and an interception with no touchdowns. And to me, he looked pretty lost, and I wasn't sure if this was a guy that was going to ever really develop into the kind of caliber player people were expecting of him. But this year, he's been great. Mm-hmm. How much of a difference is that from what we saw last year?
Well, I think the thing is you kind of had Mettenberger still getting used to the environment. I mean, he did come from Georgia and ended up playing at a junior college. I don't even know where, but kind of just getting his feet wet in the SEC. And, like Florida's defense last year on the road is a pretty tough thing, but I think there's several factors you can look at. Mettenberger getting more comfortable at the collegiate level. Cam Cameron coming in as LSU's offensive coordinator. I haven't looked at that in depth, but I do know that, having Cam Cameron helping you out certainly is a big deal.
Cam Cameron laid the foundation for Joe Flacco last year to win the Super Bowl.
There it is.
Sorry, when I think Cam Cameron,
Flacco looks lost without him.
When I think Cam Cameron, I think 1-15 Dolphins season.
Hmm. Well, nobody ever said he was a good head coach.
Do you remember?
Said he was a good quarterback coach.
Won? I remember seeing that.
That was pretty amazing. I remember the one game they won.
I was
it was like a legitimately big deal.
No, I did too. I remember. Yeah. I think it was like in overtime or something. It was a long pass or something. Like that.
And it was late too. Like they didn't win like one game and then lose 15 straight. It was late in the year. They had a chance to go winless that year. I was at the Jets Dolphins game that year, and the Jets were terrible. They were 4-12, and then Kellen Clemens, the starting quarterback, but they still beat the Dolphins like 41-13 or something like that.
Speaking of horrible football teams, stepping in a different direction for a minute, Joe, just spend a few seconds talking about your lowly Jaguars. Another loss today at St. Louis. Another pick six thrown by Blaine Gabbert before leaving the game with yet another injury.
Yeah, I think this might be – I think this is the end of the rope for Gabbert. Just hamstrings are always tough, and you guys are giving me looks. No, I'm not done yet.
Quarterback hurting their hamstring. Career killer.
No, I'm just saying that, the injuries have piled up for him, and, it hasn't been good for him even when he's been healthy. Trading Eugene Monroe and then losing Luke Jokel for the season certainly doesn't help that cause at all.
What I think, a cruel loss.
Yeah, like
broken ankle for Luke Jokel.
I think Matt Watts, one of our former Alligator guys, tweeted today something like, "You know, that's so Jaguars that they would trade Monroe and then Jokel just gets hurt immediately."
Yep.
But just full tank for Teddy mode now. It's going to be a rough one, but those of us who are, you know, willing to admit that we're Jags fans in public will stay in the storm with the team. So.
Let me make sure I'm hearing you right. You're saying that it is in fact Tebow time. If you want to tank for Teddy.
If I had to attach my hopes and dreams to a lead balloon, it'd probably be Blaine Gabbert before it'd be Tim Tebow. Because you know, I mean, at least Blaine Gabbert's grabbing headlines in Grantland and that quarterback thing.
I mean, only like 9 factors in that Grantland story.
Oh yeah. Way to go, Bill Simmons. Don't even let us comment on your story. So,
Teddy Bridgewater having a pretty good season, so that's something to look forward to. The guy's got 16 touchdowns and only one interception this year, so maybe next year Bridgewater will be throwing to Cecil Shorts. He looked pretty good today.
Yeah, I mean, Teddy Bridgewater's exciting. I'm thinking of the other quarterbacks coming out. I mean, I like Aaron Murray. I mean, I'm not saying take him over Teddy, but, you know, you never know.
You can always take Murray later in the –
Yeah,
they didn't draft him.
I mean, I'll get a couple.
I kind of think Jacksonville might need to take 2 quarterbacks, so they can just get rid of Henny and Gabbert.
Of course, they would take 1 quarterback and move him to wide receiver.
Well, I mean, like, are you talking about Matt Jones or Denard Robinson?
Both.
Okay. Yeah.
Moving on before we get too depressed, let's talk about something that makes everybody happy except for opposing teams, and that's the Florida defense. Florida's defense entering Saturday was leading the SEC in pretty much every category: total defense, scoring defense, passing and rushing defense, third down defense, time of possessions, whatever it was, you name it, they were leading. And they put together another solid effort against Arkansas, limiting them to 10 points and only, I think, less than, was it 275 yards of offense? I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was pretty low. What's been the one thing that stood out to you along the defense this season? Not even this season, but the past month. What stood out to you on defense?
For me, what stood out the most is in the secondary. It's just been ridiculously good. You have Purifoy coming in. He made his first interception on Saturday. Roberson has been hurt lately, but he looked all right against Toledo. Looked like he was kind of relying more on his talent than, you know, playing up to his standards. And Hargraves, I mean, what can you say about him? He's just been unbelievable. Like, top recruit. Really hard to live up to the standards that people had for him, and he has. He's got 3 picks already. Was pretty close to a 4th one against Arkansas. I remember the ball was going out of bounds, and the ball was like right outside of his grasp, and he could have had it if he'd been like a step farther, he might have been able to pull it in. He's just been ridiculously good. And at safety, Cody Riggs has looked really good. He's been making a lot of really good open field tackles. Watkins has had a good clutch pass break up in the end zone against Arkansas. The secondary has been what's surprising me, and for a unit that's been so good, that's hard to say that any part of them is standing out.
When I look at Florida's defense, the loss of Easley is obviously a huge deal. They're not really creating that penetration on the interior that they were when he was in there. But I will say that the emergence of Purifoy finally kind of coming out against Arkansas is an encouraging sign. It's not at that spot, but the fact that they have that playmaking threat back on the defense. I mean, Purifoy blocked the punt against Miami, but you know, I know Durkin was talking about fundamentally and technique wise, there was some consistency issues. He had the deep thigh bruise against Tennessee that he suffered on the kickoff return. So to see him healthy and come off that corner blitz and then finally get that first career pick, I think that's a big deal for Florida's defense. The thing I guess I keep an eye on is see is how Damian Jacobs and Leon Orr and Jonathan Bullard really do, kind of creating that penetration, or at least trying to create, you know, a fraction of the penetration and disruption that Dominique Easley caused on the inside.
You think, I think that their run defense, like even with losing Easley, was really good against Arkansas. Mm-hmm. Arkansas, I think, was 2nd in the SEC in rushing, coming into Saturday, and they held them to like 100, their second lowest output of the year. I think it was like 111 yards. Alex Collins, this is something that amazed me when I looked at the stats at the end of the game. He had, I think, 51 net yards, 51 mm-hmm. total yards at the end of the first half, and he had 54 at the end of the game.
Rush on the ground, yeah. I mean, they really regrouped in the second half and played really well. A column I wrote coming out of the Kentucky game was that Vernon Hargraves is Florida's best cornerback at this time. Do either one of you want to disagree with that statement from what you've seen so far?
It's a complicated question because I think there's different aspects of what make them, you know, as good as they are. If you, you know, I mean, like, if you're going, like, for the best player among the cornerbacks, I'd probably lean towards Luchez just because he has the history of playmaking ability on special teams as well as defensively. But, I mean, if you're going based off a pure, you know, cornerback, Vernon Hargreaves has been pretty incredible in terms of his coverage ability and getting his hands on those interceptions. And, I mean, phenomenally just kind of picking up on Florida schemes and really contributing despite, you know, only being a freshman.
I mean, Hargreaves obviously has looked fantastic. I mean, everything so far this season kind of has come with the caveat that, you know, they've played Tennessee and Arkansas and Kentucky and Toledo, Miami being the only ranked team they've played so far. Hargreaves has looked as good as anyone in the country. He's been ridiculously impressive. Purifoy probably might have the most raw athleticism and ability just to make plays, whether it's in the secondary, you know, making an interception. I was really surprised to find out that to realize it was his first in his career interception. He seems to have this as an incredible playmaking ability, or, you know, he can blitz and get a sack and force a fumble on a violating quarterback. Mm-hmm. I'd have to go with, in terms of best all-around cornerback, I want to say Hargreaves because he's been so impressive so far, but it's hard to say that for a freshman who hasn't really played any real good team yet.
Yeah, and we shouldn't forget Marcus Roberson. I mean, he's obviously struggling with the sprained knee, but a very good cover corner as well, an experienced guy who should add plenty to that secondary once he's able to get healthy.
Yeah, Roberson's missed the past three games, and I guess you can't really blame Florida for trying to get him healthy leading into LSU.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, why risk it, schedule. You know? I mean,
with Hargreaves doing as well as he has, play him.
Yeah.
Moving on to special teams, an area that's become a major concern for Florida. The Gators currently don't have a number one kicker, and if they have a number one punter, it's probably Kyle Christie, but even he struggled to this point this season. Austin Harden was pulled. He was a number one kicker all season. He missed his fourth field goal of the year on Saturday against Arkansas, a low-line drive that was blocked and looked like it never really had a chance from my point of view. Brad Phillips came on, made a 28-yard field goal, and then missed an extra point in the second half. What do you guys make of that situation? Is there anybody that's, I mean, how does it shake up?
I do think it's Florida's weak link, obviously. Losing Caleb Sturgis is a huge blow, but that being said, that doesn't excuse these guys from missing kicks. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say I could kick a 42-yard field goal, but yeah. Then again, I don't have a scholarship to this university to kick field goals. And considering how much time they put in practice, I just don't see why there can't be any separation there. I feel like these guys were good enough to earn scholarship offers. Well, I mean, Harden was anyway. Phillips is a walk-on. Yeah, I mean, in terms of Austin Harden, I don't know if there's something in his head or, like, you know, if it's like a mechanical thing or whatever the deal is. But, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and go, oh, Jeff Choate's a horrible special teams coordinator. They need to put Durkin back on there or something like that. And in terms of Kyle Christie at punter, you know, where – I mean, he certainly struggled to get the leg under the kicks that, you know, and in terms of placing the ball, too. I mean, that's just baffling to me. I don't even understand Kyle Christie. I guess it's just a mental thing at this point, because he certainly does have ability to do what he did. I mean, Ray Guy finalist last year, made a lot of big punts for Florida. So special teams are, I mean, I guess in short, since I sat here and babbled forever, are pretty concerning for this team right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to note, I mean, for punters, the difference between a great punter and a bad punter, like, Christie's, I think, was averaging like 36 yards or 38 yards a punt compared to last year where he averaged like 44. So that's about a difference of like 15, 20 feet. A couple good bounces and, you know, his average gets right back up there. But obviously he is struggling. You know, he badly missed one that was like, I think, went for 15 yards. He had a bad punt. I think it was late in the game against Arkansas where he just trying to pin Arkansas deep and he just booted it like 5 yards into the end zone. No chance of getting it pinned inside the 20. And as far as kickers, Harden, I don't. Muschamp said after Kentucky, he sent him out there for a 53-yarder that Harden just missed real badly. But he said after the game, I said I have confidence in him. Even after he said that earlier, he was in an open up the kicking competition. He said I have confidence in Harden. And then he just pulls him in the middle of the game. And the job is Phillips to win. It's all his. And then he missed an extra point. Like, that's like a, what, 20-yarder? 20-yard?
It's got to be the botched opportunity of the
year. For real.
I will say this about punting. Like, the whole thing's a crapshoot, though, when you think about it. I mean, just from the eye test, Christie hasn't looked good. But you got to, like, in terms of field position, like, how far you're kicking it, you know. I mean, pinning him inside the 20, you want to look at those numbers. But then again, if you're punting from your own 20, you're not pinning them inside the 20. So, that you know, I mean, looking at the numbers is kind of a tricky thing in that area. But, I mean, based on eye test stuff, Christie just hasn't been the same at all.
And you know Muschamp's not happy with him at all. He, like, he came as close to calling out a player as I've ever seen. Yeah. Where he's like, when he was asked, he said, "We didn't forget how to coach him." I just gotta wonder what's happening. Is it just like he's getting some bad bounces and he's just missing a couple balls, or is there something more to that?
Where's Johnny Townsend? I want him.
Free Johnny.
Bring him out. Free Johnny.
I would love to see Johnny Townsend get a shot. I mean, not that I have anything against Kyle Christie.
Yeah, me neither.
I just like seeing players get a chance to play.
Yeah.
Might as well, you know. I mean,
I thought Phillips was long overdue to get a chance with the way Harden was struggling, and he got his chance, and they shanked an extra point. So, that's about enough that I want to talk about in kicking. Joe, someone I meant to talk
Craig
to.
Craig Kaluka would just – Craig Kaluka, if he's listening, is probably just cringing right now.
I think
he's
turned it off.
You guys
now.
Actually spent 5 minutes on special teams. What is wrong with you? But go ahead. Sorry.
Someone I wanted to mention when we were talking about offense was your boy DeMarcus Robinson finally – working his way into the passing game a little bit with Murphy at the helm.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I mean, DeMarcus is a talented guy, and, you know, I mean, just he's got to take advantage of his opportunities. That's all I can really say about it.
Yeah.
I mean, P said he was going to pop off soon, and if popping off soon means a catch per game, then, I mean, just, you know, the talent's there, you know. I mean, like, I remember when I, like, you know, I talked to former Gators wide receiver Jacquez Green. That sounded like a horrible name drop. But I talked to him for a story I did on DeMarcus Robinson for the Sentinel in August.
We're buds.
Late August. And he was just like, you know, I mean, when it comes to freshmen, you know, just everyone has like a different, you know, growth period. And just depending on how the offense is shaking out and certain things like that, you may just not produce right away. I mean, not everyone's going to be a Vernon Hargreaves coming in and just setting the world on fire. And, you know, especially with guys like Patton and Dunbar and Trey Burton all producing at the receiver position. You know, kind of, I mean, it probably is hard for guys like Robinson and even Ahmad Fullwood to get in there and get consistent targets. And yeah.
Two things stuck out to me about Robinson on Saturday. The first one was that catch he almost made, the one that got reviewed.
That,
if it's an inch or two higher, that's a fantastic play that really the ball shouldn't have been caught. The ball was on the ground, and he just comes back and dives and was this close to making a play. That, I mean, so you can see there's the talents there. He can make a play on the ball. The second thing that stood out to me, and more noticeably, was he badly missed a block on a screenplay. I'm pretty sure it was him. He just badly missed it, and, like, Tallman Patton got lit up just on this, unprotected on the screen. And you guys think that maybe why he's not getting as much playing time as people might have thought, if he just can't do fundamental things like, you know, set a block on a screen. And if they can't block on that, Patton's going to get hurt again. Mm-hmm. And the way Patton's been playing this year, they can't have him get hurt.
It's funny. I think about that. Like, I think when Urban Meyer was here, he was always big on the wide receiver blocking.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why that just randomly came to mind. And I'm sure every coach emphasizes it, but I just remember reading like some story on it, like all those years ago. But, sorry for that tangent.
Yeah, Patton's a guy who can make, like, I mean, I'm usually not a big fan of bubble screens. Probably because I run them in NCAA football and they just never work. But Patton's a guy who can make that play work. He can, if he breaks a tackle and gets a good block, he's gone. That's a 50-yard touchdown.
And if you want to segue the tight ends, both Burton brothers are really getting a lot of playing time because of their blocking ability.
Yeah.
Of course, at tight end, finally got the first catch.
Tevin Westbrook.
Yeah. Tevin.
Good for Tevin.
Who had Tevin in the pool?
Was it one catch for -1 yards?
Nah, he was a nice little catch and run.
Maybe it was before the game. He had one catch for -1 yards.
Who had Tevin Westbrook in the tight end pool? Did we ever get
probably Pincus.
That? Probably Pincus. Okay. Yeah.
We just gotta give Pincus any freebies we can. Before we go,
so you weren't gonna segue to tight ends.
No,
I'm waiting for the Trey to Clay connection to pay off for UF. Maybe
it
one
almost
day.
Paid off in Florida State last.
One day.
Year. One day. They'll sneak it up on the Seminoles again.
Before we go, guys, I want you each to just tell me who's been the most impressive player through 5 games for the Gators this season, in your estimation. Stevie first.
Well, I mean, the obvious answers are Hargreaves and Tyler Murphy. I'm going to go with Tyler Murphy because, honestly, when he came in against Tennessee, my thought was that there goes the season. That's it. Like, because Murphy did not look good in practice. When we got to see him, we had a chance to see him in open practices in August. He looked bad. Him and Mornenweg and Max Staver, the backups, they all looked real bad. They were missing passes high. They were mistiming routes. It was not pretty. So when he came in, I thought this is end of the season for the Gators. You know, maybe they'll finish over 500 and, you know, get to the Gator Bowl or something. But, I mean, granted, it was against Tennessee, Kentucky, and Arkansas. He's looked fantastic. Like, there's not much else I can really say about him. He's been obviously great pocket presence, you know, finding receivers, making good, smart runs, and getting down when he has to. There's not much else to really say about the kid. He's having a great season so far.
Mm-hmm. And now, Vernon Hargraves is an obvious answer here, and I could sit here and tell you, you know, about how the coaches rave about his presence in the film room and just, you know, getting all the work in. But I'm going to take a moment to talk about Dante Fowler Jr., who, like, had a slow start of sorts, I guess you could say, and then really kind of burst onto the scene in that Tennessee game with the two forced fumbles. And, you know, I mean, with Easley going down, he's kind of really – I feel like he's taken on a leadership role with this defense, kind of being that symbolic leader with the Chucky doll coming around. And, I mean, he may not be Florida's most impressive player, but his athleticism is, you know, pretty lethal when he does do the right things to get in position and make plays. And, you know, I expect more from Dante Fowler moving forward.
I remember I was watching – I was doing an column on Fowler and Bullard.
That's right.
And to drop my column, go read it if you didn't read it yet. And the first sack he had against Tennessee, the one on Rajon Neal that forced the fumble, Butch Jones was screaming at the referee because he was sure Dante Fowler was offsides, and he wasn't. Fowler was – like, he was behind the TV line, like – he's got a great jump and just ran around the right tackle. He was, like, the right tackle went to set a block, and Fowler was way past him. He was already hitting Rajon Neal. He went through, like, Neal's legs, and the ball popped out. And he made a play that reminded me of Clowney's hit against Michigan, where he just, like, stuck his arm out, grabbed the ball, and brought it in. Mm-hmm. He's incredibly talented.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, I think that's probably it for this one.
Who's your most impressive Gator, Phillip?
Austin Harden. No, I'm just kidding.
Really? You were kidding?
I think Murphy obviously has been impressive, and the guys that you mentioned on defense. I really like what Solomon Patton's done this year.
Definitely.
I mean, the guys pretty much burst onto the scene, overcame a pretty gruesome injury last year, and, I mean, he's been their number one receiver. He's got 4 receiving touchdowns, I think 348 receiving yards through 5 games, and some really explosive plays that have made Murphy's job a lot easier. And that's something that they're going to have to continue to get from Patton when they face the brunt of their SEC schedule. And we'll see if he can continue to produce.
He also brings the telepathy as well.
A lot of telepathy.
Did he have telepathy with Jeff Driskel?
I don't think so.
That could have been on display during the Miami game.
Yeah, you see, we just moved under that football that was in the air.
Yeah.
He knew where that ball was going.
Mm. But
it's not coverages or, you know, route running or anything like that. So
it's a fifth sense.
We're terrible people.
All right, guys. Well, I appreciate having you guys on. We'll be talking some LSU later this week. Maybe have Adam Pincus join the podcast, old friend of the show. But we got to go catch up on Breaking Bad. Oh, wait. No, it's Sunday night. There's no Breaking Bad.
It's all new for me. I just started the series. Of course, after it finished, I'm on episode 4. So if anyone spoils it for me.
If anybody else is.
Everybody tell Adam Lichtenstein, also goes by Steve, how it ends on Twitter.
Please don't.
His Twitter handle is @alichtenstein24. If you could tweet him just what happens, that'd be great.
If anyone actually does that, so help me God, Joe.
Don't tell him how Jesse dies. Sorry, Steve. All right, guys. Well, thanks for having on.
Wait, hold on a second. Check back
for another show later this week. But Joe's got something to say, and then we'll wrap up and be
really,
out here.
Really quickly, and like I know we gave them the glimmer of hope that this thing was almost done, but if you haven't watched Breaking Bad yet, is it at a point where maybe you just watch Better Call Saul first, since it technically is a prequel, and then watch Breaking Bad?
You see, I don't know. I don't know if there'll be any flash forwards in the prequel or anything. I would guess not. I think they're going to totally try to separate it. So maybe you do. I don't know. If you're interested in watching Better Call Saul, I think you go to Breaking Bad, because I can't imagine that's even in the same ballpark in terms of quality.
Well, Vince Gilligan's going to be involved, and
It's not
going to be Breaking Bad, okay? I'm not saying that. I'm just saying,
sounds like that's what you were saying, my friend.
No.
Oh, Phil, just so you know, Snape kills Dumbledore.
I don't know what that means. If anybody wants to check out some more Harry Potter, check out Steve's column from a couple weeks ago.
Actually, the Horcrux killed Dumbledore. It's just, you know.
All right, before we get to any more Harry Potter content.
He was dying anyway.
Close it out. We'll see you guys next week, and thanks for listening.